From the Guinness Merchant and 91.1 WCBT Gettysburg, I'm Ben Ponce, and this is On Target.
I'm Gari Mangala. Today on Target, we'll be discussing outbreaks of disease and disorder.
Wow, sounds interesting. Then we'll talk to Hannah Dalzell, chair of the Student Senate Diversity Committee. Stay with us. Well, after that ringing endorsement in the introduction, let's dive into it. disease and disorder.
Your words.
Yeah. Well, let's start with disease.
Yeah.
So, disease.
So, recently, many members of the campus have been discussing hand, foot, and mouth. I know a couple of people that have actually gotten it, and it's a pretty nasty thing to get. Discussions.
Does it affect the hand, the foot, or the mouth?
I believe so. I believe that's like blisters. And the issue with it is that you don't know you have it until you have it. Like, there's no, it's not like a cold or a flu where you kind of like feel it.
As in the symptoms don't manifest themselves until after the infection could be spreading further.
Yeah, it's really rough and it's just blisters everywhere. And apparently it's just really nasty to get. So in Student Senate and just like in other places on campus, people have been discussing like what the college can do to make sure that students are safe. And one of the ideas that has been brought up a few times, especially in Student Senate, is timely warnings, similar to those that we get from Bill Lafferty at the Department of Public Safety, about, you know, when there is, I think the most recent one was like a burglary.
Yeah, according to the Clery Act, the college is required to give the campus timely warning of certain classes of violent crimes.
Yeah, I think some students want to see that coming out of the health center as well when it comes to things like hand, foot, and mouth, or I believe something else was going around recently, pink eye or something, and they want to hear from the health center. It was found later on that it was in one student digest, and then there's the whole conversation about, like, well, do people actually read the student digest? But
no.
Yeah. And the conversation then
I read the digest, but many people say I'm not a real person, so, you know.
No comment on that one. I'm not one of those people. I am one of those people. So students want to see more conversation with the health center in general, just to have a better communication with the health center about things going on campus, that could, especially because when you're in such a closed environment. I mean, Gettysburg College is what, only a couple of blocks of land, and
I'd be surprised if campus was more than one square mile.
Yeah, so I think the thing, and we talk about it, you know, when you're a senior in high school, you talk about just being sure that you're being safe on campus just because disease and just, you know, the flu can spread so fast on campus and wanting the college to do something about it. But then there's also the conversation about like how much of that is the college's responsibility.
To that point, the college this year, with respect to the flu, did make the flu vaccine free for
yes.
college students. I don't know, I haven't heard whether that increased the participation rate of students in getting the flu vaccine. Certainly, I think the college has a vested interest in people not running around campus with contagious diseases and no one knowing about it. But again, there are a lot of institutional policies that don't exactly encourage people to A, go to the health center, B, to not go to class. I mean, every professor on campus has a different attendance policy, and such that, you know, the health center doesn't provide medical excuses for students. They can report that you attended that or that you visited the health center, but they don't provide a documented medical excuse. And so faculty have 150 or 200 different policies on attendance, such that, you know, if a student doesn't want their grade to be lowered in a class, or a professor who doesn't distinguish between excused and unexcused absences, and they've already used their quota of whatever number of absences they're allowed to have, I mean, what's the incentive for them not to bring their hand, foot, and mouth to class? I don't know. it seems to me that there are some issues there that cut beyond the health center.
Yeah, I had a professor last year in the spring semester who, you know, when we talked in class the first day, she said something along the lines of, like, I don't want to get sick. I don't want anybody else to get sick. So please do not come to class if you have something. And it was, like, very important to her that kids didn't come to it. And it was mostly just about not spreading anything. You know, like, you're in closed classrooms. And it was, like, a big class in a very small environment. You don't want that. But I've also had other professors that are like, your learning is extremely important. You need to show up to class.
Yeah, let me say something about this attendance thing.
Yeah.
If you're going to pay $67,000 a year and not show up to class, go for it. Like, why on earth do faculty feel a need to coddle students so much that they need to make 20% of the grade in your class walking in the door?
Yeah. I've talked to a couple of my friends about this to go to bigger universities, especially like, you know, like the ones that you see in the movies where it's like 200 kids in a giant auditorium lecture hall with no attendance. And I remember like I toured, I think like a lot of Gettysburg College students, I toured like all like the stereotypical Dickinson, F&M, like Gettysburg or Sinus. I toured them all. And like, that was a big like selling point to parents was you know, we're holding your kids accountable and, you know, attendance is mandatory and blah, 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 blah. But like these are 18 to 22 year olds. Some kids are like 23 or 24. If you don't come to class, like you don't come to class. I don't get it.
If you want to grade class participation and obviously you can't participate if you're not there, fine. But this idea that, you know, people need to have it held over their grades to walk in the door is as offensive as it is ludicrous and demonstrative of either the perception or the existence of a culture wherein people cannot be trusted with their own learning. And if that's what we have, then I don't know what the heck we're all doing here.
I don't get it. I don't think it makes sense. I don't think, like, if you're sick or something's going on, I understand the need to email your professor. I understand the need to, like, keep everybody in check.
That's, like, things that people do.
Yes, but I don't think it makes sense.
You need to reward basic functioning as a human being. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, but, like, I don't think it's, I don't think it's a professor's responsibility to say that, you know, you can only miss this amount of times. Like, if someone has hand, foot, and mouth, like, I don't know all about hand, foot, and mouth. So, like, let's say, like, the flu. Personally, for me, when I get, like, really sick with the flu, I have it for about a week and a half. If I'm taking a class that's, like, Monday through Thursday, like, I'm screwed. There's my days, you know? And, like, I just don't get it. How, like, that can, like, affect your grade. But also, like, it's not like coming to class is making you any better. Like, we talk about this and from, like, when children are extremely young. Like, if you are sick, you don't come to work. If you're sick. And, like, that's the other thing. Professors, they don't have quotas of how many times. Do they have quotas for how many classes they're allowed to cancel?
Not that are enforced.
Like, it doesn't make sense to me. And, like, that's not knocked off of your attendance. If they cancel class,
yeah.
It just does not make sense to me. And how much does it truly, like, I'm not saying that your class isn't important. I get that your class is important. I get that you're teaching and I get that what you're saying in class is important for students learning. But it's similar to what you say. Like, we're, I think, at a point in our lives where we're allowed to make the decisions, and I think students are allowed to make the decisions for themselves, what they do and do not care about. If a student thinks, like, that, you know, staying at home for the day and taking care of their health is more important than going to a lecture today that is, you know, like, one of 14 weeks, 42 lectures of a semester is going to be more important, I don't think that there should be a penalty for choosing that. When oftentimes the PowerPoints are online, they have office hours, we have PLAs. Like, we have systems in place to catch up with class. It's not like missing class is going to be the end of the world.
Yeah. And back to my financial point one more time. According to my super fast math, and we should note that $67,000 a year includes more than class. But just assuming that it was only including class, which hopefully is the fundamental reason that most people come to college, every minute of class is worth about $7. So, you know, miss as many classes as you'd like at your own risk.
Look.
Blow your investment if you'd like.
Honestly, though, like, I just don't. It doesn't happen at other colleges. It does, and I think it comes back to the idea that the like liberal arts colleges coddle students.
Well, now that we've spent 10 minutes ranting about attendance when this started about disease and was not as much about disorder, let's go to the disorder piece of this.
Yeah, Ben, so recently I think you published an article in the news section about a recent, well, now a recent firing. As it's been updated, of a construction worker for the new Cub.
Yeah, so during the earlier in the fall semester, the college had various contractors in and out of the Cub at various hours of the day. And one such contractor, an HVAC company, Fry Lutz, employed a man who has been charged now with three counts of harassment and two felony counts of stalking, and he has been fired, or more accurately, to be clear, he no longer works for Fry Lutz, and the college is reportedly reevaluating its relationship with that contractor. The man has been charged and has now been formally arraigned on those charges. According to an article in the Hanover Evening Sun, he allegedly got hold of a student's phone number who is an employee at the Cub desk. Apparently, a list of student phone numbers was posted in plain sight for all the world to see at the Cub desk, a situation that, according to a college spokesperson, has now been rectified. But the student received numerous phone calls and then had an in-person interaction that prompted her to call police, at which point the man was arrested and now no longer works for the contractor. So it, you know, it remains to be seen if there's any long-term repercussions either with the college's relationship with this contractor, which, as I mentioned, is currently being reevaluated. And, you know, we'll see where it goes from here. But the man in question, Michael Zapchich, no longer works for Fry Lutz.
Yeah, it's, there's been a few, like, things I've heard about on campus about, like, kind of these stalking situations, but usually it's, like, student and student. And you, I guess, because we are a smaller campus, you forget like that the real world is here at times, and things like that can be a bit
jarring.
Yeah,
it's interesting. The college does have a policy for all contractors requiring background checks to be conducted on their employees who work at the college prior to retaining those contractors. And according to the college, Fry Lutz was made aware of this policy. It's unclear whether a background check was conducted, or frankly, whether it would have turned anything up, as it's unclear that this was not a first-time offense. So, with that, what else do we have on the docket to discuss? Obviously, some major world news. The 41st president of the United States, George Herbert Walker Bush, died earlier this week. There is currently an op-ed in the Gettysburgian written by Zach Sobeck, the president of College Republicans and a Bush admirer.
And Ben's roommate.
That too, who shares his tribute to President Bush. So you can read that online. What else is going on around campus, Gari?
Recently, I think just like a lot, you know, we just had like Thanksgiving break, and now, oh Jesus, I hate saying this, but next week is the last week of classes before finals. So I think a lot of people are just very stressed right now, but there's been some really, really cool just events on campus. I don't think advertise as de-stressing events, but they've been pretty great. Like, there was the choir concert that happened last night, and they performed a bit of Handel's Messiah, which is performed once every 4 years, because I believe the music department's of the ideology that every singer should have to perform the Messiah once. And it was very long, but it was very lovely.
I'm for it. Big Handel fan.
Really? Can't say I love Handel very much. But, you know.
I read in the, I didn't go to this choir concert, but I did read the program. And apparently it's a myth that people actually stand up, that King George III actually stood up during the first performance of the Messiah. I don't know. I mean, I'm all for musicology and historicity and everything, but I don't know. I would stand at the Hallelujah chorus.
It was interesting. Dr. Natter, after, like, all of the individual choirs had their moments to just, like, sing their pieces, Dr. Natter kind of stopped, and people were, like, arranging themselves. The orchestra was coming in and tuning. And he stopped, and he was just explaining about the Messiah, and he was explaining about, you know, just choir in general and, like, thanking everyone for coming. He thanked the loyalty club. And then he starts talking about it, and he was like, it's a myth. And he said something, I'm paraphrasing, but he says something like, I invite you to remain seated for the Hallelujah chorus. And it was just so, I found it so funny, the idea of someone inviting someone to continue sitting. But yeah, it really was lovely. There was a lot of soloists. One of them was actually one of my writers, Bridget Kennedy. And she...
Multi-talented Gettysburg and staff members.
You know how it is. And it was just a very, very lovely concert, in the chapel. And it was a really packed house. So it was really great to see a lot of support there. And then a student capstone is going up in the theater department this week. Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7 p.m., Blithe Spirit, directed by Nicoletta Muntanos. I'm actually stage managing it, so I'm calling the show.
There's some self-promotion right there.
You know how it is.
Well, to promote the activities of other Gettysburg and staff members, the Spark Notes a cappella group has a concert this week on...
Wednesday.
That, of course, is led by Gettysburg and chief copy editor Lauren Hand. So there's that. So a panoply of events occurring over the remainder of the semester before the dead period begins next Saturday, wherein no one is allowed to host any events on next Saturday because it's a campus-wide reading day. And as you know, the Saturday before finals, I'm sure no one will be engaged in anything other than reading.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep, that's just going to happen. Mm-hmm.
All right, and with that, I think that's going to wrap up our news segment.
Ben will be right back with the Bullet Report.
And then we'll talk to Hannah Dalzell. Now it's time for the ever-popular Bullet Report. It's been a fairly dull 2 weeks in Gettysburg College sports action. On November the 17th, the women's basketball team defeated Juniata 73-66. The men's wrestling team defeated Scranton 25-23. The women's basketball team defeated Lebanon Valley 76-61 on the 18th. The men's wrestling team defeated Rowan College of Gloucester County 27-18, also on the 18th. The men's wrestling team defeated Penn State Mont Alto 46-9. And the men's basketball team on the 20th gave Franklin and Marshall a loss 84-71 in conference play. The women's basketball team also defeated Franklin and Marshall 63-53. The women's basketball team defeated Ursinus 72-60 a week later on the 27th. The men's basketball team defeated McDaniel 60-56. The women's basketball team defeated Johns Hopkins 67-60 on the 29th. The men's wrestling team finished 7th of 15 at an invitational. The women's swimming team finished 2nd of 5 at the Gettysburg Invitational. The men's swimming team finished 1st of 4 at the same event. The women's track team and the men's track team participated in the Diplomat Open at Franklin and Marshall but didn't receive a team score. The men's swimming team and the women's swimming team once again on December the 1st finished 1st and 2nd respectively at the Gettysburg Invitational. The women's basketball team defeated Haverford 55-52 and the men's basketball team lost 72-70. Thus endeth the Bullet Report. And we're thrilled to be joined today by Hannah Dalzell, the chair of the Student Senate Diversity Committee. Hannah, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So why don't we start? Can you just talk a little bit about how you sort of got involved in Student Senate and specifically with the Student Senate's Diversity Committee?
Well, I actually never saw myself as a senator, especially as a first year.
You're currently a junior.
Yeah.
Well, things can change.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Let's see. I started out as a Senate representative for the Asian Student Alliance, and I don't know, I was actually, you know, Nick Arbaugh, the student body president. I mean, obviously you know him. So I dated one of his friends on campus for about almost 2 years or something like that. And I don't know, like Nick, that's how I got to know Nick. Because we would hang out sometimes, and one day Nick just said to me casually, like, you should apply to be a senator, and I said, okay. Like, I didn't think he was serious about it, but anyway, I'm not dating his friend anymore, but so I submitted my application and my cover letter, and then it just kind of happened.
Mm-hmm. And so you started this year as just a class of 2020 senator, and then more recently, you became the chair of the Senate's Diversity Committee. What made you decide to apply to be the chair of the Diversity Committee?
Well, at first, I didn't think that I would be qualified enough, actually. Like, I remember the Senate meeting where we talked about how we were accepting applications for new people, and all these people came forward and were, you know, saying, like, the last diversity committee chair is totally incompetent, and they were just, like, you know, just attacking him and stuff, and I'm not incredibly directly, but it was very scary. And mm-hmm. I thought, there's no way I can do this. And so I think that diversity, like the word itself, I mean, Ivana, the other senator, is actually doing research on how it's a trigger word. Mm-hmm. And when people think of diversity, they think of, like, you know, someone's race or someone's ethnicity. And I just like to be able to help people from all sorts of different backgrounds on campus. I really like helping people. I want to try to do something big to make people feel more comfortable on campus or just to know that their voices are heard.
Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned a minute ago that students had expressed concerns. I think particularly students involved in some of the cultural organizations on campus had expressed concerns with your predecessor as chair, Josh Gonzalez, and had suggested that, in your words, that he was, you know, maybe not competent to do the job. Did you share those concerns at the time?
Well, let's see. At the time, I wasn't attending diversity committee meet. Actually, no, that's not true. I was, but near the end, though. I think that the meeting seemed to go smoothly, but what people were complaining about was the fact that he wasn't involved in a lot of, he wasn't attending, like, the different cultural events on campus. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is an important thing that the chair of the diversity committee should do. And
And so you had mentioned at the time that you would endeavor to attend as many of those sorts of events as possible. How has that been going so far? What events have you been able to attend? And sort of how has it gone as you've tried to start building relationships across campus with various students in your capacity as chair of the diversity committee?
I'd say that it's going well. It could go better. Then again, I'm always very critical of myself. let's see. I think when I first was appointed as the diversity committee chair, I went to the, what was it called? It was that event hosted by the BSU. It was like they were dancing. It was some kind of after party that was, yeah, you don't know the name, shoot. Yeah, I was very impressed by how good everyone was at dancing. Everyone was kind of shaking it and I couldn't shake anything. So I just kind of stood there awkwardly for about 30 minutes. I attended the, I went to GASA's general meeting, and I actually learned a lot about politics in Africa.
GASA is the Gettysburg African Students Association, if folks aren't familiar.
Yes, thank you for clarifying.
Yep. No, we like to throw around acronyms at Gettysburg College, so.
Yeah. Yeah, we hate that. Let's see. And then I attended, Reggae and Chill briefly a few nights ago, and that seemed very successful. It was popping in there. Well, for future events, I'm co-hosting Berg Burst, and I'm also performing in it, so.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about, and by the time this episode has aired, Berg Burst will have happened, but talk a little bit about what Berg Burst is. I was actually talking to an upper-class student the other day who said that they had heard the name and had heard about seen a lot of emails about it, but had no idea what exactly Berg Burst was. Talk a little bit about what Berg Burst is.
Sure, definitely. So Berg Burst is the annual cultural event on campus where all the different cultural clubs come together. Each one has their own table with food from their country. And it's just a time for tons and tons of people on campus, students, faculty, staff, the children of staff, to all come together and eat amazing food and watch incredible performances. A lot of them are traditional dances or songs or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And so that's happening this Saturday on campus. More broadly, what are your goals for the diversity committee moving forward? Earlier, you mentioned wanting to do something big. Can you talk a little bit about what you're interested in doing specifically?
Sure. I expressed that desire to Jean Arnold today when I met with her. She's the chief officer.
Chief diversity officer on campus.
And I mentioned that I wanted to do something big because I just feel like it needs to happen. And I have a bunch of small ideas. And she said, honestly, it doesn't necessarily need to be something like huge, but as long like little things can add up to be one big thing. So I remember reading an article in the Gettysburgian about how people are unhappy with how hard it is to get around campus with the how hard it is for handicapped people to get around campus. And I actually agree with that. That's an issue that's been brought up in the admissions office where I work. And so right now I'm thinking that I actually sent an email to Lauren Elizio in the admissions office, and the tour guides on campus currently have a map of all the handicap entrances and exits on campus. And I asked her if we could make that available to the public on like the Gettysburg website, or if something else could be done, if we could put that in the health center for when people get injured and are confined to a wheelchair, because we have a lot of student athletes on this campus. And
from time to time, people injure themselves while engaging in those activities.
Yeah. And we'd also like to watch out and care for those who come to the college wanting to attend.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so one area you're thinking about is disabilities. Are there other areas or some of the other small ideas that you mentioned?
Yes. We actually talked about it at the last diversity committee meeting. I think the policy committee recently made a revision in the amendment about the actual definition of the diversity committee, which I thought was fantastic. I think a lot of people needed that. So we were focusing on what we can do for the neurodivergent students on campus. We talked about what has been helpful in the past. At Lincoln, they had a break room, and I think maybe for some other event. Servo Thanksgiving, that's right. They had a break room or something to that end last year. I don't know if they had it this year, but we were talking about how it would be a good idea for there to be more break rooms during big campus events. And that could be helpful for like not just neurodivergent students, but people who suffer from, anxiety or panic attacks or anything. Let's see, what else? We're also trying to get people from Greek organizations more involved with people who are affiliated with the Office of Multicultural Engagement, the OME. We're trying to get lots of different people from different areas on campus to just come together. And one of the main issues that we've, a lot of people can see on this campus is that people who are not in the minority in any way, like, it's like a lot of them don't come to the cultural events or other events on campus. And that's not because they're insensitive people or anything like that. It's just that they don't see, some of them may not see why they should care,
mm-hmm.
because it's the issues that those that minorities face don't necessarily affect them. So that's a struggle that I feel like all college campuses have and will have, perhaps might have till the end of time. But where I've actually been talking to Elijah Fernandez, who's the head of CLAC, the
College Life Advisory Council or Committee.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate how we use so many acronyms, but we were talking about how we could do more big events that kind of unify the campus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so you mentioned a minute ago Greek life specifically. How do you think that Greek life affects positively, negatively, or otherwise kind of broader efforts towards diversity and inclusion on campus? And how, you know, in your role with the diversity committee, can you kind of seek to engage them in your efforts?
That's a really tough question. Well, I think that there was an attempt at that earlier in the year, around September. The Office of Multicultural Engagement partnered with, co-sponsored with, who was it? It was one or maybe it was ATO. I think it was ATO and some other Greek organization or something to that end. They had this big event where it was just a bunch of people having fun together. I don't remember exactly what it was for. I think one of the issues or one of the reasons why we didn't hear a whole lot of positive feedback from that was because, well, for one thing, the food arrived maybe, I think, an hour late, so which wasn't our fault. The caterers really messed up, and so Darian Davenport had to go to the rescue and just grab the food and stuff. So, I mean,
Darian Davenport to the rescue.
Yeah. So a bunch of people just, I mean, if there's no food, then granted, a lot of people are going to leave.
Right.
So I'm not, I don't know if that's necessarily like any cause, if there's any causation there, but that might have been one of the reasons why a lot of people just kind of showed up for 5 minutes and then left.
Right. And so you the other thing you mentioned a minute ago is kind of engaging students who just don't think a lot about issues of diversity and inclusion in their general day-to-day existence. Do you have any, and you mentioned that that's a broad problem that a lot of campuses face, but do you have any kind of strategies that you're looking towards engaging those students?
Well, let's see. We've definitely talked about maybe the way that we talk about diversity to Greek organizations. It's just a very hard thing to tackle because no one, or I mean, very few people like talking about diversity. It, you know, again, it's a trigger word in some cases. It makes people uncomfortable. And honestly, sometimes some people just sit there on their phones and they just kind of like, you know, tune out. One of the things that we talked about was maybe having one of their, some of their peers talk to other fellow members of their own Greek organization. But then a valid point came up at the diversity committee meeting that certain students of minorities should not be sort of tokenized or should not feel like they're obligated, like they have to speak talk about those issues as well. So right now things are kind of up in the air,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, I will definitely let you or anyone else know if we have any definite solutions there.
Yeah. And then a final sort of substantive broad question. What would you say overall the state of diversity and inclusion is right now at Gettysburg College? A nice, easy question to end with.
Well, I'm used to difficult questions. right now, it's this whole big thing that has been an issue on this campus for a while. It's tough because all of the cultural clubs are, people are kind of separated into their own little bubbles, and no one really like comes out of their bubble and like talks to members of like the other cultural groups. Someone was talking about how, you know, wouldn't it be easier if we just combined all of the sort of Asian clubs on campus and into just one big thing, like with the Asian Student Alliance, but that's not the right thing to do, in my opinion, because, I mean, as John Allen pointed out, research has shown that if people have their own separate, you know, bubbles and stuff, they are places where they can feel safe, you know, it's beneficial to them. It's just tough because people kind of stick to their own groups and they just don't interact with anyone else, and that's sad. I'm not sure, I'm trying to get everyone to come together, but as of right now, everything is still, I mean, even Gina Arnold admits everything is still pretty separated.
Mm-hmm. And then a final, perhaps less substantive question. You tend to end your emails to student senators with some rather amusing YouTube videos. If you're willing to share, what's your process for finding them, and how long in relation to drafting the email do you spend finding the video to include at the end?
Okay, is this your question or is this someone else's?
We'll say it's my question.
Okay. Well, let's see. So usually in my spare time or when I'm procrastinating, I look up Vine compilations on YouTube and I just watch them and laugh because I'm dumb humor is like my kind of thing. So I think I probably spend maybe about, I don't know, 1 minute writing the actual email itself, and then possibly about 5 to 10 minutes max looking for like the cute little video because it has to be just right. You know, I include those videos there because, I mean, you never know what someone's going through. Like, I like making people happy. And so, I don't know, like, it has to be the right kind of kitten video, you know what I mean? It can't just be like a video of kittens with like poor video quality and they're just kind of messing around with like a little tube of toilet paper. It has to be something like cute that warms your heart or just makes you laugh.
Well, we'll have to bring you back on for a full seminar on video selection, but Hannah Dalzell, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That's On Target for this week. We'd like to thank Hannah Dalzell for being our featured guest today.
We'd also like to thank the staff of the Gettysburgian and the executive board of WZBT for their ongoing support in this project. Please be sure to subscribe to On Target on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
On Target is a joint production of the Gettysburgian and WZBT. Our theme music was composed by Diego Rocha, music major focusing on composition in the Sunderman Conservatory of Music. Be sure to join us next week. We'll talk to Faith Biesecker of the Gettysburg College Department of Public Safety. Until then, have a great week.